Hello, good morning, everyone. Welcome to Block Bites. It's me, Corval, with you today. I've got Ulver and Nick from Tellor. We're going to be talking about Tellor, the Oracle solution. What is it, man? How's it different than the other Oracle providers we've talked about, like Redstone and Chainlink and Diadata? So, guys, this is going to be a fairly technical episode, and it'll give you an edge you need to really understand crypto. So stick around. And let's have a good show.
They take your money, then they take you down with them. Let's do better together. ERN, extremely resilient, naturally.
Well, hello, hello, gentlemen. Welcome back, Ulver, and welcome to the show, Nick. Nice to meet you.
Hello, hello.
So, guys, we got to talk about the elephant in the room here. Bitcoin is going to $100,000 by the end of the
day. Yeah, that's crazy.
But it has gone up quite a bit in the day, hasn't it? I'm shocked, man. I'm literally shocked. I thought it was the end of the world, dude. Everyone's been telling me the economy is going to the hell, but it seems Bitcoin is just resilient.
Well, I believed in Bitcoin, actually.
Ulver's been a believer from the beginning. Yeah. Oh, that's good, man. I mean, maybe I should take your advice next time instead of, Charles here.
Yeah, but anyway, don't listen to him.
Anyway, Nick, how you doing, man? We haven't met before. Tell us a little bit about yourself, man. You represent Tellor, is that correct?
Yeah. No, so I'm one of the founders of Tellor. So we have been around for a long time. We basically started, I started a derivatives protocol, and I was going to do this back in 2017. And wow. I got an Ethereum grant back then. And long story short, back in 2017, this was pre-Chainlink, pre-everything. There were no good oracles at the time. You know, mm-hmm. So for those that don't know, let's say you're doing a derivative or a stablecoin or anything, you basically need some way to know what the price of these assets are that you're betting on. And mm-hmm. That's basically what an oracle is. And so we kind of set off and we said, all right, since there are no good oracles, let's go make one of our own. And thus kicked off the journey that is Tellor.
Awesome. So you guys had like a need for yourselves to have some kind of pricing data and decide to just go ahead and build it out. I like that. This is so long ago, 2017, man. That's like pre-DeFi boom at all. So you were kind of at the beginning, right?
Yeah. Well, back then, so the Oracle that was alive back in 2017, there was, he's still around. It was called Oracleize.
Okay.
Thomas Bertani ran it. Basically, it would cost you 25 cents worth of Ethereum, and you would send it to him and with some call data, and he would go query an API and return you the results. And it was just like his centralized server. And this was this was the Oracle solution at the time. And, you know, we were like, there has to be something better than this. And so, you know.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome in that it's so, Ulver's back, let me throw him back up here. That's awesome because that is such like a lo-fi way of doing it. Like I'm imagining it's like a quarter machine, you know, like those ones you just like twist. You put your quarter in and you get a freaking the price for Ethereum. That's wild, man. So you're predating Chainlink. What happened to your derivatives project? Did you guys just abandon it once you started getting into the Oracle side and saw how big it could be? Or
yeah, I mean, we were kind of too busy with the Oracle stuff to kind of go after it. And, you know, like the original idea, like we were going to do like long and short tokens. Like mm-hmm. The idea, you know, you could have a long Bitcoin and a short Bitcoin token. And this was kind of, you know, semi-novel back in 2017. Mm-hmm. But it was back then other people kind of took up the helm and were, you know, once DeFi summer hit in 2019, whenever we launched Tellor, it sort of became obvious that kind of pre-2019, it was everybody was doing peer-to-peer derivatives. Mm-hmm. So, you know, there wasn't this whole pooled model, which sort of took off. And that's what's kind of taken over since is, you have to figure out a way to pool capital, which was kind of the novel invention of Compound, Aave.
Yeah. Very cool, man. So what were so you guys were like right at the start of the Oracle process, right? Like before Chainlink. So kind of tell me what's happened since then. I mean, that's so early. Like, how did you, I mean, there's a lot to improve off of just one centralized guy. You give him 25 cents and he sends you something. So you, definitely automation. Did you guys go straight into decentralization?
Yeah, I mean, for us, like, you know, like I had always kind of been a decentralization maximalist. You know, like I got into this stuff, like, you know, I was doing like the Ron Paul campaign, and, you know, like we have to scale Bitcoin to be a competing money against national currencies. And that was always the vision, you know, like, why are we doing this? And so we were kind of like pure decentralization right away. How can you do this in sort of a right manner? And that's what we did. So the original Teller, this was back in 2019 and we launched this, was actually proof of work. So you would do a proof of work calculation, and then with your proof of work calculation would submit Oracle data as well. Long story short, like most of the space, we pivoted from proof of work over to proof of stake, which is how Teller works currently. It's a simple model. You stake some Teller tokens, and then you're allowed to report data. So, you know, Oliver could ask for what's the price of ETH. Our whole network competes to give him the price of ETH for a small reward. And then it's disputable. So anybody can come on and say, hey, he, you know, the reporter lied about what the price was. And then it kicks off to a vote about whether or not it was true or false. And it's completely decentralized. So anybody can participate, anybody can report, anybody can dispute. And this was, you know, kind of how we had seen the path going for Oracles, because it's basically like, if you think about what an Oracle actually is, it's like, how can you come to consensus on a piece of data that is not sort of enshrined within the protocol? So, you know, data, et cetera. So it can be on anything. And it was basically like, we know how you come to consensus on data in blockchain world. You have a proof of stake or a proof of work mechanism or something like that. Unfortunately, a lot of the Oracle space, a lot of our competitors and things like that, they've kind of taken the easier route of saying like, well, it's a lot easier. We'll just like have a multi-sig that picks and they'll sort of come to consent. The multi-sig will come to consensus because that way you can scale it and make it a whole lot faster. And that's kind of where the Oracle space is battling it out kind of right now.
So it's kind of similar to, you know, the typical problem of scaling these decentralized networks, and the, I guess, is efficiency and the speed a big problem? The centralized aspect does seem like it might be a little bit faster.
Yeah, I mean, there's no trade-off. So, like, I don't know if your listeners will be, you know, if you guys know the scalability trilemma, right?
Yeah.
Like, you have to, like, oracles also are subject to this. Like, everything in the system is. So, like, if you want to be as fast as the block, you're going to have to give up on decentralization or security. Like, which one are you picking? There's kind of no shortcuts around there, so it makes it tough.
Yeah. What do you think are the advantages of being more decentralized?
I mean, the big advantage is it's just like kind of censorship resistant in some sort of way. So, you know, like you have a whole lot of problems when it comes to being centralized. The biggest one for most projects is just it's permission. So like most of these larger, like kind of whitelisted oracles, how do you get them to report your data? Well, you have to go to them, you have to go email them and get, you know, pay them some money to get them to report it. It's not trustless. You can't just ask them off, you know? And so what we find is a lot of people need the flexibility of like, listen, I want the price of my coin on, but Chainlink won't support it, or, you know, some other Oracle won't support it. Can you guys do it? And we're like, hey, it's permissionless. Go request it. Somebody else, you know, the reporter network can report it if they want to. And then, you know, the other piece for decentralization too is it's kind of the liveness problem. Like decentralization has its benefits because anybody can sort of become a reporter and report the data or dispute it. And which means there's no possible way to shut it down. Whenever you have a, you know, you say like, okay, these five guys are our Oracle. If they go offline, they're offline. Like there's nothing you can do about it. And there's no possible way that you can get them back online unless you like go pick up the phone and find them, which is a big problem. And it's been a problem in the past.
Yeah. I mean, that sounds like The other side of this problem to me seems like it might be because it's permissionless. A lot of our other conversations with Oracle providers, there's like the emphasis on the accuracy of the data. So if you do have like a, say, a very small new token launches, there's nothing really to stop them from then just providing the pricing data themselves, right? Like if they were to then spin up a Teller validation themselves.
For sure. Yeah, no, I mean, we see that sometimes. You know, I think the accuracy piece and kind of like what the best price is, that's like probably a whole different discussion. We're happy to go into it. But, you know, like the problem with a lot of oracles basically connect the blockchain to the real world or some other information. But the real question is like, well, what actually is that other information? You know, and that's usually like in 99.9% of price feed cases, that's the risk. Like your risk is not the oracle. Like none of these oracles are actually going to break. You're just going to go manipulate the exchange that this thing trades on. Yeah. You know, like especially with these smaller coins, you know, like so many times, like we'll be over on like we'll be providing price data on Arbitrum, for instance, and they'll say like, oh, we need the price of this one small token that only trades on Uniswap. And you're like, listen, guys, like we can give it to you fast, but like, do you really want it? Just because it's, you know, like it's trading with, you know, $1 million or two on Uniswap. So it's just easily manipulated. So that's usually where the risk lies, and finding out, you know, what to actually put on chain is even harder.
Okay. So it's kind of like the way around that kind of risk, like your transparency then, like, you know, like we're not going to stop you, kind of like Uniswap. I'm not going to stop you from making this pair or whatever, but we're going to show you exactly like the depth, like where maybe how many validators you're getting to validate this price, maybe even where the data source is, like where are they pulling from?
Yeah, I mean, it's, well, you know, like that's more of an education piece as far as whether or not you should be pulling this on chain. Yeah. And there are safe ways to do it. And we tell people like you can use slower pricing on things. So like if you use, you know, a daily TWAP on Uniswap, you're not going to manipulate a daily TWAP, but is that useful for what you're trying to build? Maybe not. So there's just kind of trade-offs along the line. And, so you usually just trying to tell people the safest way to use them. And it's kind of a challenge. And I mean, it exists even in, on centralized exchanges too, telling people like, listen, just because you can have a sub-second oracle, like you have to think really hard about whether you want a sub-second oracle.
Yeah, very true, very true. Especially with so much volatility, right? I could get a massively inaccurate price on, or an unfair price maybe is a better way of saying it. So Ulver, I know you have some questions here. I don't want to dominate the entire discussion. Ulver was burning up with some questions he had for you, Nick.
Sure. Yeah, I'm curious about Liquity. How did you get involved with the Liquity, and how come Liquity decided to use your oracles?
Liquity's, you know, they're kind of an OG project from DeFi somewhere now too. But no, they were super cool because they, you know, they just reached out to us and asked us how we worked. And then next thing we know, they dropped like a giant Oracle report that was like, oh, like we need to be completely decentralized and immutable. And Teller is like the choice, you know? So it was like, they just did tons and tons of research on every Oracle. You can go back and look. And they put out, you know, they looked at all the different Oracles and what were some of the different features and pros and cons of each one, you know, like, and they rightfully say, like, you know, the big problem with Teller is we're slower than some of the other oracles. It was just one of those pieces. But we were decentralized and immutable. So the structure that Liquity used was they used Chainlink for the main ETHUSD feed. But then they use us as the fallback. So basically, if Chainlink goes down or if our prices differ by too much, then they fall back to us. Which is helpful because, you know, the risk of Chainlink is mainly kind of like we were saying, you know, they kind of have a whitelisted set of actors, but if their multisig gets compromised or something like that, they're more likely just to go down and not be reporting prices. So then you fall back to something that the system can continue. not to mention Chainlink's ETHUSD feed is kind of free. So that's a huge benefit for a lot of people.
Yeah. I mean, we used to have a guy in the chat all the time saying, if Chainlink goes down, all of DeFi goes down. He's very cataclysmic in that sense, but because it was a single point of failure. But there are these decentralized solutions like Teller, right? I mean, but like you're saying, the trilemma, there are trade-offs. So I don't want to steal from Ulver here. You guys are going down the liquidity path, but real quick, I want to point out like your biggest difference from Chainlink, then you would say like your comparative advantage is that decentralization.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, I think it's just the decentralization is the biggest piece, but then, you know, for if you're a user, like the other piece too, like kind of where we get most of our users is going to be on the smaller coins. For the bigger coins, it's going to be you want the decentralization. For the smaller coins, it's Chainlink's kind of prohibitively expensive and doesn't quite go to every chain or provide anything that you could want. And,
yeah, so they got some high standards to be listed, I hear.
I think kind of like you had kind of compared it to Uniswap. You know, that was like the big benefit of Uniswap when it came out, right? Like, oh my God, you don't need to go pay a centralized exchange for a listing. This is amazing. Yeah. Like, and then it just blew up the whole model because everybody's like, listen, like a centralized exchange would be really nice, but I'm just gonna go do it on Uniswap because it's free, everybody knows how it works, and we can kick it off. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think that's gonna be the pivot that you see. You know, the more tokens that need oracles and things like that, the decentralized models will kind of run into those walls. And
interesting stuff. Ulver, I'll throw it back to you, man.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big problem that we see in that, you know, getting a Chainlink Oracle, it's not really easy. You need, you know, certain levels of volume on like a lot of exchanges. And so you really need like a big token for that. So for, I think, a majority of tokens, you can't really do this. So then the question is, like, what else do you do? So I definitely think that this covers a different kind of market, and also the decentralization piece is really important, that like we have options, because otherwise, you know, we all be at the mercy of Chainlink and, you know, whoever controls them. I guess that's been a big question, like, you know, who is the Chainlink multisig and so on, and you know, do they control all of DeFi and so on. So yeah, definitely see a lot of space for something like this. And we're also using Teller for our upcoming chapters, so we're working with them closely actually, I think Teller is one of the best teams we've been in touch with so far. They're very, very nice, they're very responsive people, so we really like Teller.
Awesome, dude. I mean, it sounds like you got nothing but good things to say here about Teller, man.
Yeah, they're really good, actually.
Yeah, so have you guys been really benefiting from all these alt chains and alt tokens picking up then? It sounds like Teller really benefits the more new, smaller tokens come into existence, right? Do you see people kind of... age out of Teller, or do they grow to such a size that they try to transition to a different Oracle provider? Or
I mean, Oracles tend to be relatively sticky, mm-hmm. in that usually what happens is people will pick kind of at the beginning, and then you know, similar to like most technology things, like if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Yeah.
and you see that happen a lot with oracles, you know, even sometimes on the downside, where they'll be like, listen, we're just going to start with a centralized oracle and we'll switch to Teller later, and then they'll blow up and they'll be like, listen, like nobody gives a shit, so we're not gonna do anything. And you're like, guys, like, come on, you can do it.
Yeah.
But you have seen some people, like that was originally how we got like Ampleforth, was another, it was a big one back in the day, and they were trying to decentralize. They had started out with just a centralized oracle, and then they wanted to move to a decentralized one. So we had sort of gotten some business from there. And I think you'll see that as, you know, as we move to this world of, you know, many, many chains and thousands of rollups and things like that, you're going to need basically structures that can scale and do kind of anything in a permissionless manner, just because doing it all from a central multi-sig is just overwhelming from an administrative perspective. So it's going to be sort of these more technologically neutral systems that will scale and will actually provide pricing or provide information to each of these pieces.
Oh, nice. You guys are nicely positioned there. Fantastic, dude. So what does it take to become a data provider for Teller? It's just completely open. Like let's say I wanted to do it today. I got Yahoo News, yeah. Yahoo Finance open. I'm not yeah, just copying and pasting data.
You should not be typing these prices manually in. You're doing it wrong. But no, we have some guides on our website. You can come and be a reporter. We'll warn you, it's very competitive.
love to hear that.
Yeah, you need to buy some tokens and then you can come and report. And you can do it on mainnet is obviously the most competitive piece, but then we're on a bunch of different networks where you can compete for basically people will tip. And then the thing about Teller is it's a race. Mm. So if you stake some tokens, then you're competing with everybody else who staked tokens to report. And a lot of people now they're playing MEV games. They're kind of partnering directly up with proposers on the Ethereum blockchain. And as soon as any sort of tip or anything hits, people will be kind of submitting prices, and it's almost instantaneous. But yeah, it's quite the game. It's fun to see how fast like it went from like, oh, everybody just staking report to like, oh my God, like they're like bundled with proposers.
Oh wow. Yeah.
And like you cannot do this. I mean, this was like, and it happens like this with every tech. Like back when we were proof of work, we did like I built the first proof of work miner for Teller, and we did, it was like a Python build. And then within like a week that was uncompetitive. So we built a GPU miner, and then within like a month after that, then we, you know, people were selling these FPGA chips in China to mine Teller tokens. This was like, we had like a $10 million market cap at the time. And people were like, you could buy these $10,000 FPGA chips to proof of work mine Teller. And you see the same thing kind of happening. Like it's just the tech specialization in crypto just is off the charts.
That's so beautiful, man. That always reminds me of that story of like the, I think it's like the Chicago Stock Exchange. They spent like some absurd amount of money, like $10 billion to lay like a line to connect them directly to the New York Stock Exchange just for like 2 milliseconds more finality. And that's what's happening on Teller, dude. You're getting this crazy arms race where everyone's just competing to win the race. I kind of like that, man. Are there any trade-offs with that though? Just if it's just the speed, well, I mean, you have to reach consensus still, right? On the pricing data, but the winner is just the first ones to propose and reach the consensus.
Yeah, so you're locked out. So like it's based on the number of tokens you have. So on mainnet, the stakes are based on block time. So the stake on mainnet Ethereum, since it's slower, is 100 TRB. And then once you report with those 100 TRB, you're locked out for 12 hours. So you can't report again on those
100 TRB. Okay.
And those are locked to be slashed. So if you want to report every second, you got to stake a boatload of money. So usually, you know, it decentralizes the reporter set by basically you kind of have to, if you do have stake, yeah.
Because it becomes progressively more expensive. So it's unlikely that anyone is going to accumulate enough Teller to just dominate all price reporting.
Right. Yeah, no. Okay. And it's all optimistic. So like, and a dispute can be raised on it at any time. So, you know, for up to a day, so you can, even if you put a bad price on, you're going to lose money. Usually the other reporters are all monitoring whether or not it's a good or bad price. And so if you raise a dispute, you pay 10% of the stake. Mm-hmm. And then it goes to a 2-day long vote, whether on who's right. And if you're right on that dispute, you get his whole stake. So people very quickly want to dispute it and make money off of it.
Hell yeah. Nice. Okay. It seems like a nice system for ensuring competitiveness and accuracy.
This is the big thing. So if you're talking to other oracles, just ask them how people get slashed. Like any system that's actually crypto economically secure, there is some form of slashing or you can lose money. Either unless it's like proof of work, which is, you know, you basically you burn stuff before you get it. There's slashing involved. But like most of these other oracles that are really, really fast, that's the problem is if you want to be really, really fast, they basically said like, oh, well, we won't have slashing.
Yeah.
You know, like none of them have slashing live. And it's like, this, how is this secure at all? Like, it's like, yeah, it's really bad as far as this.
Yeah, it seems you're making a good, strong case here. The slashing is important to align everyone's incentives, right? To penalize bad behavior, because it's not just enough to incentivize the positive behavior.
Yeah, well, I mean, this is kind of with any chain, you know, anytime you're looking at a chain and what its security is, like it ultimately comes back to like, okay, what is the crypto economic security? How much are these validators putting up and potentially risking to lose if they lie? And that's like what crypto is. Like anybody can do it, and you don't have to trust somebody. You trust that the game theory is all aligned and these guys basically aren't going to want to lose money. And that's what crypto is.
Okay, cool. I mean, that was one of my questions. How does disputing data reports work? So that seems pretty nice and logical to me. Ulver's freaking me out here, dude. He's like fading into the matrix. The internet connection's got to be terrible out there, Ulver. Sorry to see it. I'll speak of the devil. But yeah, so next I got to know, what do you need to get data from a teller oracle? Let's say I want to work with you guys. In my notes here, I have tip, etc. So I got a tip to get a teller? Teller data?
Yeah, well, that's just how you request it. So, you know, the first thing you can do is, you know, reach out to us or go to our docs and you can try and integrate yourself. But like, let's say you want, you know, the ERN token price. What you can do is you have to submit a tip. So the reporters have to know, okay, what should I be reporting for? And they know by, they monitor the network for what we call tips. And you would tip with, you know, ERN USD. And they would all see that, and then they all race for that tip. And basically the tip, for the most part, it just has to be a tiny bit above gas costs on a network. So, you know, because they have to submit transaction to submit it. So you basically have to cover their gas costs, and then they'll throw it on chain. And so on cheaper chains, it's pretty free. You know, the only thing you have to do beforehand, so we have what are called data specs. This is a GitHub repo, and but basically you have to teach the reporters what to report. So like if you want, obviously like a crypto token price, like they know how to report those. They're relatively good and they have sources. But if you want something, you know, we actually don't just report price feeds. You can add some transformation to it. So if you wanted, say, I want a volume weighted average over the last 2 days of my token price on these specific exchanges. You can go, you know, you just have to teach reporters, okay, this is actually what I want. And then we'll get you a unique query, and then you can tip that, and they'll report something more custom for you.
Okay, very cool. So you can construct like different kinds of data that you want. So not just price. Are there assets outside of crypto that you guys work with too? Like, can I be like, I want the price of the NASDAQ or whatever. I want the NASDAQ volume weighted price or something, right?
Yeah,
can we get that crazy?
Yeah, we put stock prices, commodity prices. Over on Polygon, we're working with a prediction market, so you can just basically ask it random questions, and then Teller will work. Obviously, if you do random questions, the reporters actually have to like manually type out answers, and so they're a little bit slower. But it's a it works, and Teller can throw anything on chain.
Awesome. You guys sound extremely malleable in terms of like what you can provide and kind of how I can even get it. Where can I find Teller oracles now? Like, are you guys on, like, how many blockchains are you guys on?
I don't know the number off the top of my head, but we can do, we're on like
many.
We're on like every EVM chain. So like we can, if it is in Solidity, we can go there and deploy there. So yeah, we're pushing prices to like basically all of the Optimism, Arbitrum, Polygon, Filecoin, Ethereum, Gnosis Chain. Yeah, all the giant EVM chains we're on.
Awesome. Cool, man. So I kind of got to know now, like where what's left for Teller? Like where are you guys growing to next? It sounds like you guys have really honed in system as it is. What's left to polish?
This is probably a much longer conversation as far as our plans for the future. So we actually announced a little while ago, we're actually in the process of building out our own chain. We're calling it Teller Layer. The big piece that we've noticed is basically we're in a world right now where the current flaw of the Teller mechanism is that if you want to be on Polygon on Ethereum, you actually need to put the token on both Polygon and Ethereum. I made a heart, I think.
Okay. I didn't even know that was a feature. Very cool.
Yeah. But you have to be on Polygon and Ethereum with the token. And so if you have data requests on both chains for the Bitcoin price, you actually need to submit on both chains, which is inefficient. This works for a handful of chains, but we're being requested on like tons and tons of chains. And the future that we see has like thousands and thousands of chains. So how can you possibly get Teller over on thousands of chains? And what we want to do is we want to focus on bringing all of the data and the data generation onto our chain. So we want to focus on how can we make the best possible data, and then we'll bridge the data, not the whole system, over to each chain. Because this is another sort of piece that we see kind of be in the future. It's that bridging is kind of easier now. You know, if you're following it, like trustless bridging is sort of becoming a thing. Like it's the multi-sigs of the past. You know, basically we're going to abstract those away with technology. And I think that's what we're seeing. And so if once bridging goes away, then you can basically have, okay, how can you get all of the data really honed in on one fast chain and then bridge it out? And that's what we're focusing on doing now.
Nice. I like that. It's very forward looking. That's something that I've heard a lot of people talk about. The thousands of chains really stuck out to me in that I've heard lots of smart people talk about this. Eventually, we're going to have so many chains, but bridging will be so easy. It's going to be less perceptible that where you are. So this seems like a very logical conclusion. Like, let's make a hub, data hub, instead of just redeploying everywhere and then just feed the data out from there. Is it maybe a little early, though? It feels like bridges are still, they're getting there, but it feels like they're not quite there. What kind of risks do you see with this kind of model?
Well, I mean, we're not quite live there yet, mm-hmm. so we're still planning on doing the current Teller model for quite some time because it still works. It's rocking on a lot of different chains. But, you know, like we have to plan for the future. You know, this is sort of where everything's going. And the biggest risk, obviously, there's technological risks. Just you want to make sure that basically, you know, the zero knowledge proofs that we're using to bridge these chains together and that these things become secure. But, you know, like the bigger risk to me is right now everything is sort of mainly on Ethereum and it sort of stems out from there. Mm-hmm. But as you move to a lot of these other chains, like we're moving to a Cosmos chain, a lot of other people are moving towards, you know, some of these rollups, but it's not quite clear how decentralized a lot of this stuff is. Yeah. You know, most of it is still like you're moving away from a very decentralized financial system into one that like, okay, we're all going to have our own app chains, but it's secured by like a delegated proof of stake with five people.
Yeah.
You know, like that's not the ideal world that we want to get to. And I think it's going to take a lot of people who are honestly looking at these things and saying, listen, like it's fine that you moved away from Ethereum because it didn't scale. And yes, this is, you know, a valid path for everybody to go, but you have to focus on how do you decentralize this stuff. You know, in the same way that Ethereum works really hard to get a lot of validators, it works really hard to get people actually running their own nodes and validating the chain. You're going to need to do that on all these other chains too. And it's going to be just, you know, how, you know, educational content like this to get people to say, okay, you actually have to do the hard work and, you know, go validate the chain and, you know, not just sort of trust this multi-sig to do it for you. So, yeah.
Yeah, that does seem to be kind of a refrain I'm hearing a lot. I think last week we talked about it too, how a lot of chains seem to be decentralized or present themselves as decentralized, but are not quite close at all. A trend that I'm kind of seeing in crypto, and I'm curious to pick your brain, Nick, you've been around for a while. The broad spectrum of blockchains, right? Like there's going to be, when we have these thousands of blockchains, we're going to have a significant number that are completely centralized and are not even pretending to be decentralized. And then we'll have everything in between. How do you feel about that trend? Do you think like that the decentralization is going to start? Do you think decentralization can effectively compete against these centralized entities? Like, let's say JP Morgan chain, right? Like, can we really compete?
I think in some ways you can. You know, like the bigger piece about it is like, I'm fine having it as a fallback mechanism too. You know, like it's a-okay if you have crypto systems like as just, this keeps the centralized systems in check in a lot of ways.
I see.
You know, like if you can make sure that, okay, the centralized systems, you know, like let's say you have a payment rail that mm-hmm. goes through, you know, one centralized system. That centralized system has to behave if they know there's a crypto system right here that everybody will use. And yeah, they have to pay a little bit of money, but they'll go use it if you block them. And so it just changes the whole mindset of having these centralized systems. You know, same with kind of crypto in general. Like you could see a future where, like, you know, does Bitcoin become the global currency, or do these stable coins actually be used in everything? And the answer could be no. But what it could be is maybe all of those governments now know, like, oh shit, I have to keep my inflation in check, or else everybody's just going to go to these crypto systems.
Yeah.
And so, like, you know, like you sort of win by default. Like you didn't actually win, but you're changing what actually matters, which is that, you know, this was the goal to have a more stable currency that, you know, the authoritarians don't step out of line. And I could see that being a future.
Okay. That makes sense to me. Like the success is the mere existence of it as an alternative in like a market, right? That you are forcing that competition. This is kind of the ethos of Teller. It seems like the competition is really driving it all, right? Because these centralized systems are now being forced to compete with the decentralized systems, at the very least, the very worst, they're going to be forced to be better in how they operate in order to compete.
It's kind right. of like, yeah, completely. And you know, like that's like, I argue with people a lot in the crypto space on this, like, you know, like why are we actually building this? You know, and like, do we foresee a world, like let's say we have this interoperability financial system that's being built on the blockchain. Like what everybody wants and everybody like sort of shields is that like, oh, like my token's going to be the one that yeah. like runs this financial system and then extracts value to it. And, you know, like basically they're paying dividends for all of eternity to me as a token holder who got married. And you're like, this just sounds absurd, right? Like, why are we building a middleman into the system to begin with? Like, no, mm-hmm. like the ideal system, it's just this technology that sort of runs and doesn't extract massive profits for its token holders for eternity. It actually doesn't really do that. It, you know, like if you want to have a centralized system that provides value and returns to shareholders, fine, go for it. But, you know, like the crypto systems and the ethos, I think, that are actually going to stick around and you know, sort of change how the financial system works. These are going to be more just like, this is the Teller structure, if you will. Stake some value, report some value, people can dispute some value. It just sort of works and makes sense. These giant companies that think they're going to have this, you know, crypto token that also is a stock that pulls value to it for all of eternity. Like, I don't think that's necessarily what we're building for or what the future will hold.
Yeah, I think that's kind of like the impulse of, I mean, it's an inherent human impulse, right? You want to accrue as much value to yourself as possible, but it kind of reminds me of like, especially when I see people really talk like you're saying, like, we're going to dominate with our one token. Everyone's going to have to use this thing. And because I am early, I'm like a feudal lord. So like I have control, right? So I'm profiting off of everything. The decentralized method will likely be because it's more accessible, I think, right? Like if everyone can participate in the system, no one's going to want to pay your outrageous prices, right? It'll free market balance itself out, hopefully.
Well, then this is, I think you see it happening like with Ethereum too, you know, so I rail on the ultrasound money guys a lot. You know, like you go from like, you're an actual useful system, but then it gets really expensive and people start, you know, creating their own systems. And so you need some way to say that people are going to stay on your own system. And you're like, well, how about we just say like, you don't actually need people to use our system. Our system is the asset. It will just slowly go up in value forever. And that's why people will use it. And, you know, that's where Bitcoin is. That's where, you know, some of Ethereum is kind of going. And you want to fight against that. You want to say like, no, like, we're trying to just scale the whole space. Like, we're trying to, everybody can sort of build a more inclusive financial system. We can build actual companies that scale and, you know, provide actual things for users that aren't just tokens that go up in value. It's nice. And we're all here for that. And we, you know, like that can happen, but then, you know, don't be afraid to sort of go to the next thing. Don't get tied down and have to change your narrative to it becoming ultrasound money or digital gold. Like, no, like it can just serve its purpose and then we can, you know, mold it into something new that's useful. And that's cool.
Yeah. I like that. It's like it requires a certain level of satisfaction, I think, though. You have to be kind of satisfied with what the plan is. You can't have this kind of scope creep and this feeling of eternal competitiveness. Changing track here just a little bit. Since Ulver dropped, I have like some of his questions here. He wrote so many questions. I feel bad he didn't get to ask you. this kind of relates to what we're talking about in terms of decentralization. Now, everyone that's watched this show knows that I'm like a real governance kind of like naysayer. Like I'm not a huge believer in governance, but he's got a question here. How can Teller help with voting? It seems like you guys assist in governance voting. How does that work?
Yeah, so the one product we have currently that helps people with voting is, you know, if you know how Snapshot works, basically you can do off-chain voting and then somebody can bring the vote on chain, and that somebody could be Teller. So we do that. We've done that before. So we help people. You can do all your voting off chain because right now, I'm sure your users know, your listeners know that on chain voting is very expensive. You have to pay a lot of gas to get people to vote on chain. And most of the time it's a waste and people don't do it. What other systems have done is they'll go and you'll vote off chain in some normal forum. And then you have an Oracle that can bring the results on chain. That's what Teller can
do. Okay. Nice. So that's you guys right there sitting pretty right between Snapshot and these governance proposals. This is a more general question. Do you participate, like, does Teller have any kind of governance process like that?
No, I mean, the only governance we do is we vote on disputes. Mm-hmm. So people will
much more practical, I would say, right? Like in
Yeah, so we have it split up. The reporters, the token holders, the users, and then the team has a share for voting on the validity of disputes. It's a 2-day-long vote. People vote. It's all on chain, but it's good in that it can be multiple rounds. So if you don't like the results of the dispute, you can reopen another dispute on the dispute, and this can, and it increases in fee, so it can go on like infinitely. Until more and more CRV is tied up in this thing.
Nice.
Yeah, so nice game theoretic.
Vote big world war.
Yeah. No, but most of the, almost, I'd say like, I don't know if we've had like any actual disputes in terms of like that were malicious or that weren't. Almost always with disputes and oracles, it's somebody wrote a custom reporter and the software broke.
Okay.
And they accidentally the last one we had was, it was like 2 weeks ago. Somebody accidentally reported the Bitcoin price for the Ethereum price. And it was painfully obvious to everybody instantly that, and you know, within a minute he was disputed and everyone just was like, yeah, it's wrong.
A massive slash perhaps.
Well, yeah, he lost a stake. He lost like $10,000 for doing that.
Pricey mistake. I've had a couple of those.
So, you know, so bad things can happen. Make sure you're, paying attention.
So I have another one here. How do you ensure reliable data with in-house oracles where Teller is the only reporter? So if I'm understanding correctly, there are some data feeds where Teller is the primary reporter or the only reporter?
I think it might have to do with kind of like I was saying, like there's Teller is easy to verify if, you know, you're right or wrong. You can just dispute it if it's wrong. So I don't see how that's necessarily an issue. You can always dispute it. Anybody can vote on whether it's right or wrong. The bigger issue comes into play whenever there's more of a single just API that's your source. That's going to be your much, much bigger risk there. Most of the time, like we're seeing this a lot. A lot of people are starting to use liquid staking tokens or liquid restaking tokens in there, and they'll come and ask us for a price feed on it, and we're like, listen, this trades on one curve pool, guys. Like, not. Like we'll give it to you, but just be wary.
But that's a fragile data point, right? Like it could be subject to like manipulation or just random chance, like spiking kind of thing, right? Is that kind of like the risk?
Yeah, well, the risk a lot of times, so, you know, like if you have this, you can, a lot of times within, you know, some of these pools, you have to be wary, okay, are the proposers going to mess with it? So like you could even have just, you know, the block proposers, if you got four blocks in a row or, you know, two or three blocks in a row on, as you're an Ethereum validator, what can you mess due to that pool? Also, you know, a lot of times what people don't like to admit about a lot of these Uniswap pools, stuff like that, is like, even if you have $20 million in this pool, if that's only two people that are providing that $20 million, like that's just two people. So you have to be very wary, you know, like it's like, yes, it's a Uniswap pool, but with $20 million, but it's like, it's Wintermute and they, you know, or whoever is doing this Uniswap pool. So be very careful that you actually know how decentralized that pool is, because it's the same as, it could probably just be the same as a sex.
Yeah, that's a pretty frightening, I hope you didn't hear that motorcycle right outside my window, but that's a pretty interesting point that I don't think a lot of people take into consideration. I usually don't think about it, but it is true. When you're transacting in this pool, a lot of times you might as well just be working through like a typical market maker, right? Like if it's just one person, like just Wintermute or whatever. I got Ulver's questions here addressed. So I kind of want to flip back, Nick. I'm sorry, we're all over the place here today.
All over the place.
But I'm really keen on picking your mind on kind of like on DeFi and its progression, because you've been in this space since like the beginning, right? What trends developing now? We talked about the multiple chains, right? Like the many chains reality that we're probably approaching. What other kinds of trends do you think are going to like really manifest going forward? Like narratives that might become more concrete, for instance, like real world assets, anything like that, that you're kind of really interested in, that you really see as being the next thing?
I mean, there's things that I see as being the next thing, and there are things that I hope will be the next thing. And unfortunately, they're sometimes two different pieces. You know, like the real world asset piece, like I'm not a huge fan of real world assets on chain. It tends to be, most of the time, there's huge regulatory risks to actually doing it. Just basically because, like, you know, no actual government, you know, the US government is never going to actually issue a bond on chain. For some time, you know, it's just not going to happen. And if it does start happening at some scale, it'll probably be cracked down upon relatively quickly. So I don't see that being a narrative. What I see probably being more of the narrative would be things that look like USDC passing the yield on. So, you know, you tokenize treasury yield or something like that held by a single custodian. And you'll probably see more of that kind of thing, which is it's a sad state for the space in general, because it's, you know, like, it's about as non-decentralized as you possibly can. And, you know, this is, you know, same with a lot of people are just learning how to, like, the big trend I see happening, and it's like, I'm trying my best to stop it, but it's happening anyway, is like, just basically like liquid staking, liquid restaking, and just this leverage upon leverage thing. So, you know, like, the idea is like, you stake your ETH as a validator, you get a liquid staking token, and then you stake that in a restaking platform, and then you get a liquid restaking token, and then you go and you stake that in DeFi, and you get 10% on, you know, your short whatever, and the whole thing is just this like giant levered up thing that's ready to blow up in our faces. So I see that happening more, and that's something that hopefully I think the Ethereum community would be right to kind of rail against it, especially with regard to liquid staking tokens.
True, but it is kind of a difficult thing, right? Because of like the largely permissionless nature of these things, right? So are we just gonna, do you think that we're gonna have to suffer? Like, is it gonna have to blow up first before people realize like it's a bad idea, or like keep away from it? Or
like it's fine. Like, if you wanna lever up and do treasuries, like, if you want to invest in a treasury and get a liquid treasury and invest that back in the treasuries and like do that and it all blows up. This is like same with like that's an application level thing on Ethereum. I hope we at least protect the validator set. So like, you know, liquid staking tokens, liquid restaking, I think those are a separate risk to the Ethereum community, because basically like if that blows up, like your chain could halt. So the big risk for Ethereum right now is like, you know, like Lido, for instance, like I'm sure you know, like Lido has 33% of staked ETH. And so basically like one party, I know they say they're a DAO, whatever, you know, but they could prevent finality on Ethereum. And the bigger risk, like Lido's like a level one risk to Ethereum. Like they're probably not going to do anything. But like what happens like whenever like the staked ETH ETF drops? Like Coinbase launches a staked ETH ETF and everyone is getting, you know, that 4% reward depositing with Coinbase. And like my bet is Coinbase will be what, 70% of all staked ETH or something like that. And it's gonna look, and it's just gonna look silly. And like, what do? Like you have to basically say as a community, like, no guys, like you can't do that.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I mean. Like how do you even stop it, right? Like
Well, so it's you can have a social layer, like this is okay, you know, like the Ethereum social layer doesn't really do a whole lot, but you can go on and say like, listen guys, like you could just say like no one identified validator set can be above 20%, and like we're gonna identify you, and if we can identify you, we're going to, you know, cut down on your rewards or something like that. And you could just say it, and like I think like even if you just made that threat like credible enough, then like they just wouldn't do it and it would be okay. But you know, you sort of have to have some of that in there. Because like I think that's something I've realized over time. You know, I used to be a much more free market, but it's like, you know, markets are relatively poor at regulating themselves. You know, as we see, like, you know, people are just, because they're willing to leverage up and leverage up and leverage up and blow this thing up if they think they can get out in time. Like, we know that's how crypto works. And everybody listening is probably like, yeah, like I'll probably like, you know, everyone's like, where can I find the next Terra? Like they all like want to find it. And it's like, this is a problem. Like we know you have to have some sort of social regulation to this stuff, unless you want to have that crazy, just like, yeah, I guess we're going to all blow up. And
true. That social layer is important, because it is interesting. You'll see when I see people talk about Terra, it is like, usually the thing is like, I wish I had gotten in and out sooner, more so than I wish that hadn't have happened. I wish that we hadn't have allowed that to happen. But yeah, I think you're right. There does need to be some level of self-regulation, if that's what we want to call it. Just because like the markets themselves, like you said, are not the best at regulating themselves in some ways, just because I guess like statistically how things play out, where you'll just have like large entities form, like power coalescing or value coalescing into these smaller entities. I guess it's the consistent problem, though, is like a lot of times you can't really stop it. I mean, that's the story of human history, really. How do we stop this from coalescing? But at least with the blockchain, we have a lot stronger tools ourselves to kind of nudge these things in the right direction, right? Like the staking systems themselves are, you're only a real money hater if you have been in there. Yeah, that's a good one, Phil. But yeah, I think a lot of times too, I'm interested to hear what you think about this, Nick. I think a lot of times the ethos of crypto, when I first started getting into it, was much more about that, like decentralization, like flattening out kind of like these power curves and distribution curves of like wealth and power. And much more now it's going kind of back to just traditional finance. Like, how do I make as much as possible, as fast as possible? And who gives a damn about anyone else or the system, right? It's kind of a tough thing to see.
Yeah, it ebbs and flows, you know, because like obviously, you know, the more people that come into crypto, it's like the marginal person, the next person in, will probably care less about the values of the past. Mm-hmm. But I think this is okay. Like it's sort of a natural progression. You just have to know, like, you have to sort of set up the system with values in place, like, and try and hold on to it as long as possible. Like I think this goes back to like, you're sort of a governance naysayer, but like even governance in the traditional world, it's like a lot of hard work by actual people to keep this thing working. Like if you just let it go and you don't care about your local government, it gets captured and, you know, people elect poor leaders and they trade on the stock market against you. And, you know, in the same way in governance, it takes a lot of people who actually care about it to put in a lot of time and effort, probably not for money, to make it work. And you have to have these sort of values. And then what I hope we can do is, you know, like, this is why, like, I am bullish on, like, the multi-chains thesis. Like, if you have thousands and thousands of different ecosystems, then we can sort of have individual values within each one. And that's okay. You know, you can sort of coalesce, like kind of like the local government's thesis, like have more local government power versus state power. Cause you know, if you try and do everything under a Bitcoin, well, it gets captured by social interests who basically just don't ever want it to change. And they can do that. Which is what would happen, you know, like the Coinbase staked ETH ETF, like what would happen to Ethereum? You would never do any upgrades ever again. It would be like, listen, we're going to harden this thing as a rock. We're going to try. We're going to make this ultrasound money and make it the next digital gold to compete with Bitcoin. And it's like, cause like it all just trades on an ETF. Like, why would you want to actually make it useful?
Yeah.
So like you have to sort of fight against that narrative early on before it gets captured. And then once it gets captured, try and start new ones, I guess.
I guess that's our best bet. Right. And that's kind of one of the advantages, I guess, of crypto. I think it's probably one of the advantages of crypto, and also kind of, oh, one of the weaknesses is that, yeah, we can just start something new. We could spin something new tomorrow, on to the next one. But it does allow for that kind of diversification of value, like you're saying, and approach. It's, you know, it's like state of nature, right? We're all competing against each other. You know, you got to have lots of variants in order to have a successful ecosystem. But, you know, Nick, we're coming up on the hour here. RIP to Ulver, who I don't know what happened. I guess the internet died. I feel real bad for him. But anything else you want to say here in the last couple minutes, Nick? Anything you want to plug with Teller? Anything upcoming in the short term you want to get people's eyes on?
Yeah, I mean, come help us. So we're just starting testing out our new chain. You can come do that. If you need Teller or an Oracle on any chain, definitely reach out and let us know. We're going to be at ETH Denver. So if you're watching this and you're coming out to Denver, stop by our booth, come say hi, get some swag. It'll be good.
Nice, dude. I might make the journey out there. So this new Teller chain, we talked about it briefly earlier on, but so are you guys in testnet already?
Just starting out at our testnet, so it's coming along.
So cool. Yeah, so guys, go out there, test it out. test it out for Nick. Do him a favor. You know, see how the chain runs. Let him know. I'm sure he's eager to know. Anything else I want to say? Oh, no, that's about it. Thank you guys so much for watching. Thank you for everyone in the chat and anyone watching later. We really hope you enjoyed the show. Once again, thank you so much to Nick. I really appreciate your time. It was a really interesting talk. It was a fun chat. Until next time, guys. Adios.
Thanks, Coral.